Our next speaker is Dr. Warren Dick from The Ohio State University.
Thank you, Dexter, and thank you for being here. And this is a summary of a result of a study that we've been doing over a number of years, and I think some of you are wondering, when are you going to get the results out? So we finally have it all analyzed, and we're going to show you some of that. We hope to get it submitted here in the next few weeks, actually. I'm going to just skip this. You all know what that is. But we're going to look at really more the issues of, we have one slide on yield, but looking at how the gypsum affects maybe some of the chemistry and environmental impacts of its use. And we're comparing it to mined gypsum. Just because organic farmers will use mined gypsum and it's perfectly fine, so if we can show that our FGD gypsum is very similar to mined gypsum, we think that's a very good test, that it should allay a lot of fears. So we had this network that we started a number of years ago. We have two sites in North Dakota, one site in Indiana, two sites in Ohio, a site in New Mexico, two in Alabama, two in Wisconsin. We try to, well, in different crops, different soil types, different rates, but you'll see in the next slide, we tried to standardize the experimental procedure that we had three rates of mined gypsum, three rates of FGD gypsum, four replicates, and the mined gypsum and FGD gypsum rates were equal. So pretty much the experimental design was the same across all the different treatment, all the different sites in different states. Most of the research was done on plots, except that Indiana they had field strips. It was applied just once at the beginning of the experiment, so that's important because we have found, the previous speaker mentioned, the benefit does decline over time. You know, if you apply something in the spring of this year, the spring of next year, the benefit will not be as great as this year, and each year you lose some of that benefit. So we applied it once at the beginning of the study. And then we looked at crop yields and component chemistries over a period of 2 to 3 years. So what did we measure? We measured the soil. We measured plant tissue. We measured water samples. From the zero rate gypsum treatment and the high rate is what I'm going to be reporting, the highest rate of gypsum. So we have some intermediate treatments, but I'm going to simplify for today, for a 15-minute talk, looking only at the zero rate and the high rate of the gypsum treatments. Soil was collected from 0 to 15 centimeter depth or 0 to 20 centimeter depth in just a few. We tried to standardize, but some states we got a little bit of discrepancy there. We put in suction lysimeters at 60 centimeters depth so we could look at the effect of the soil water and the impacts of the treatments on that soil water. We analyzed a large suite of elements, and you see the whole list there. And, of course, at that time, mercury was a big thing. It's still, people ask about mercury all the time. So we also looked at mercury. All of it was done by ICP, except for mercury. We had a special analytical procedure for the mercury. So this is kind of meta-analysis of all those different sites. It's really no much, as far as the amount of data, isn't that much more than what we just saw in Wisconsin, as far as number of sites or data points. It's just that it was a much broader geographical area and maybe some interesting things in that regard. When we started the analysis, we went to a guy, a scientist in plant pathology that does a lot of meta-analysis research. We asked him, how should we analyze this data? Because there's a lot of tricks I found out about how to do meta-analysis and to do it right. And we wanted to do it as much properly as possible. So he helped us through this whole process. But we have 20 site years where we have soils data, 11 of those site years where we had 20 megagrams per hectare of gypsum was the rate. Six of those site years were 9. Two of those site years where we had 2.24 and one of those site years at the very low rate. So this kind of gives a summary of all the different types of data sets that went into the meta-analysis. Plant samples, we had 25 site years, and you can see most of them were skewed to that higher rate, because that's what we tried. Some of them, of course, the highest rate was 9, so we couldn't go up to the 20, because the highest rate was already 9. And water was 17 site years, 7, 6, and 4. So studies in the meta-analysis, these were some of the procedures. This is one of the references. It's a book, Introduction to Meta-Analysis. Studies were weighted according to variances, with studies having lower variances giving greater weighting values. So the tighter the data from the treatment effect, the more weight we would give that study. If there was just a lot of scatter and noise, we would kind of discount that data set a little bit lower. Meta-analysis, we had to come up with some way to normalize across all the data sets. So we used a response ratio. The response ratio is really the treated value over the control value. So basically it was the high gypsum rate over the control rate, which was a zero rate. And so if we had like a doubling in the effect of calcium, we would have a response ratio of 2. If it were 1/2, which would never happen with a gypsum treatment, but theoretically, if you had 1/2 the amount of calcium where you had the high rate of gypsum and the control, compared to control, you would have a response ratio of 0.5. Then we took the log of that treatment to kind of give a normalized distribution of the data. We did our analysis, and then at the end we converted back to the R values in our report, in our final results that we're showing. Random effects model includes an estimate of variance between studies that are added to the variance within each study to produce this weighting factor. So we looked at, again, this variance within each study and then weighted it accordingly. And we did separate meta-analysis for mined gypsum and FGD gypsum. So one thing we have not yet done, and we really need to do it, is compare the mined gypsum with the FGD gypsum in the sense that are those the same. So we're just showing the response ratios of the mined gypsum and FGD gypsum, but we're not doing statistical analysis on that difference. We're only doing the statistical analysis on the response ratios, whether it's mined gypsum or FGD gypsum. Is that clear? I hope so. So these were some of the elements that really we did not put into the meta-analysis because they were mostly below detection limits. So beryllium, molybdenum, antimony, thallium, and soil, quite a few in plant tissue were very low or below detection limits. They probably weren't zero, but below detection limits. And then the water samples, again, some very low samples. So these generally had were below detection limits, or if we did put them in, they were always no effect of the treatment. The response ratio was just 1.0. So I'm going to just kind of eliminate those as we go forward here. So these are some of the results. Of course, the first thing you would probably expect is calcium and sulfur response because gypsum is calcium sulfate. So if we looked at the response ratio of the soil calcium to the highest rate of gypsum versus the control, you can see there's really no difference. The mined gypsum and the FGD gypsum responds the same. You would expect that, right? But people always ask me, do they act the same? I can say, yes, they act the same. Okay. The soil sulfur, there was a little bit of difference. And you'll see in the water at the bottom, the water, vadal zone water samples, there was quite a bit of difference between the FGD gypsum and the mined gypsum. Now I could probably throw this out. We have so many gypsum people here. You might say, well, why is that difference? The difference is because the FGD gypsum usually has a much smaller crystal size. It's more uniform, so it tends to solubilize a little bit faster than the ground-up mined gypsum that a person would apply what we applied. So it's strictly, I think, strictly a response to particle size as much as anything. And you would expect it to show up first in the water samples, and that's exactly where we saw it.
I like your reference to Canton at the bottom there.
Oh.
Little Ohio hometown.
I don't even know why that got in there. I don't remember writing. I saw you chuckling. I couldn't figure out why. What was so funny about my slide, you know? Yeah, I'm from near Canton, Ohio.
Yeah.
So this the other one that we always get questions about is mercury. If you use FGD gypsum, are you going to contaminate your soil with mercury? That's invariably a question we get. So you see the response ratios for the mine gypsum and the FGD gypsum in the soil, plant, and water. The soil and plant, you know, they're almost identical, 0.97, 1.03, 0.997, 1.02. There is a little bit of difference, but it's still below 1. So actually the FGD gypsum was better as far as water quality in as a response ratio as affecting the mercury. But there is a little bit of difference, and we need to do the statistical between those differences, but I'm just showing the actual values in this case and looking at the response ratios. These are the soil response ratios. And again, calcium is what you would expect, is you get a kick from calcium because of the calcium in gypsum. So the response ratio of the high rate of gypsum over the control is 1.56, 1.57, over almost exactly the same. A little bit, the potassium is a little bit lower than 1. Magnesium, you know, we talk a lot about, people talk about gypsum kicking off magnesium. We haven't looked at the water samples yet, but if you look at just the soil, it doesn't really seem to impact the soil sample analysis very much. It does seem to have a little bit of impact on the sodium. And one of the things that we all know about gypsum, it's a very good treatment to affect and remediate sodium affected soils. And so you see that maybe a little bit there. Of course, again, sulfur, you would expect that to be higher. And strontium, you'll see this in another place too. The mine gypsum had quite a bit of strontium, probably just the source that we were using, and we see the response ratio there is quite a bit higher than that for FGD gypsum. These are the plant tissue response ratios. Again, you see that at the very bottom, the strontium, so I'll start from the bottom up, very consistent with what we saw in the soil. But the calcium, not that much difference. Even though the soil showed it, there wasn't a whole lot of difference in plant uptake between the high rate of gypsum versus the control. Sulfur, we did see a response, and we know that gypsum is a good source of sulfur, and the plant is responding to that. Otherwise, maybe nickel is a little bit down. But these are some of the ratios we saw. I think these are some of the more interesting because these are maybe what solubilized gets more available, impacts the soil chemistry a little quicker. Almost all of the response ratios were positive, and all of these were significantly statistically positive. The one negative on the mine gypsum for sodium was negatively, but significantly negative. But if you just scan through, you see 2.65 for calcium, 1.98. Again, you would expect that in the water. Magnesium, now you see where the gypsum is really kicking off the magnesium, getting into the water sample. Molybdenum, sulfur, a really big response of sulfur in the water. As we talked about earlier, strontium. So all of these are positive. So the first, I guess the take-home message, when you apply gypsum, we call it moderately soluble. It's not highly soluble. We call it moderately soluble, but it's soluble enough. It can get down into the profile. And when we do tests of soil profile samples, we can see this gypsum move. There's this bubble that comes through the soil profile. And I think it's the direct response of what we're seeing here in these water response ratios. Corn yield response ratios, this is what we see. We have some other studies. It seems to take 2 or 3 years, unless you have a sulfur response, for gypsum to have any impact on yields at all. We just don't see an impact on yields of our gypsum treatments unless we're sulfur deficient. That's really the only time. Now, over time, we are seeing, maybe third or fourth year, we're trying to do some longer term. We're seeing this trend where the gypsum is beginning to show benefits even in yields. But it takes longer. It takes more time for that to occur. In conclusions then, often FGD gypsum is more available, less expensive than mined gypsum. The short-term impacts of FGD gypsum are mostly neutral when compared against the mined gypsum sources. We conclude that FGD gypsum is an appropriate substitute for mined gypsum as a soil amendment and can be used without concern about its impact on soil and water quality and on plant nutrition. Thank you. So how many minutes do we have? No minutes.
You got time.
Oh, we have time. Okay. If there are questions. Okay, way in the back.
One concern I hear about use of gypsum is effect on nutrient availability. Phosphorus, for example. Can you address that in relation to some of the results that you showed?
Okay, we have some other people here from Alabama looked at phosphorus in Arkansas. I always quote this paper by Brower et al. Some of you know that paper, where they looked at soil test, Bray P test values, where they added gypsum and where they didn't add gypsum. It really moved the needle almost nothing. It precipitates the phosphorus, keeps it in the field, so as we saw in some of these other studies, it helps improve water quality that's coming off the field, but that phosphorus is still available to the plant. And we don't see any deficiencies or negative impacts of the gypsum on phosphorus nutrition. Because the plant root rhizosphere makes a slightly acidic, it causes slight acid in the rhizosphere environment. And any of that precipitated calcium phosphate, which is not highly insoluble, it becomes soluble very quickly. So I don't think phosphorus. The other thing we hear a lot about is what about magnesium and potassium? On our sandy soils, we do see if we have high gypsum rates, we get in balance as far as magnesium issues. On our clay soils, and probably potassium also, on our clay soils, almost always, when we add gypsum to our clay heavier soils, our potassium test values go up. I think it has to do with something about the lattice structure of the clay and releasing the potassium within the lattice structure, and we actually see those values go up. Good question. Long-term potassium leachate, I would just watch it. I don't think I'm to the point where I'm worried about it now. I haven't seen anything to make me worry about it at this point, but like anything else, you might want to just watch it and just make sure. Sure. Leo says he hasn't seen it. He's the expert.
Well, no, we just did 5 years of one bunker rate or gypsum applications, and we haven't seen any.
Yeah.
And I still want.
Robert, you had a question, right, or not? Comment.
Yeah, clearly there's a great deal of interaction between distribution rate and the results you get. So I just wondered, they're not totally being chemically obsolete, but there are other calcium products which are more soluble. Have you compared the results from other calcium products?
We have not. We've only looked at the mine versus the FGD gypsum. I don't see where the plant has been suffering at all because of the solubility differences between what we did with the mine gypsum and the FGD gypsum, which was slightly more soluble, I think, strictly because of particle size. I think that's the only reason in this case. Because gypsum is gypsum. You know, the only difference that's going to affect its solubility is particle size in that regard. All right, thank you.